Welcome to the Mostly Mom podcast, where we have conversations about being a mom and all the other things we do along the way that make us who we are. Hi, I'm Kristen Shelvin. While my days are filled with many roles and responsibilities, Mostly Mom is my favorite title. I think normal moms have the best stories, but they don't usually get to share them. I'd like to take some time to sit down with a fellow mom to discuss the good and the hard, the joy and the sorrow, what we're facing in our current season of motherhood, and lessons we've learned along the way. I hope you are encouraged, challenged, and inspired by these conversations. Hi, Adrian.
Hello, Kristen.
Thank you for sitting with me to talk for a bit.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
I feel like we could start so many different places, but I would love if you would just share your story.
Oh my goodness. Well, I guess when I think about sharing my story, it is puzzling to me because it's not the story I would have written.
Yeah.
And the life I'm living now isn't anything like what I thought it was going to be when I was young. And I have to say that the life that God wrote for me is so much more fulfilling than I could ever have imagined. And so I sit here as you ask me to tell my story. I'm super, super grateful that things didn't turn out the way that I thought they should.
Yeah.
And and it just goes all the way back. I mean, I've been married for 35 years. In a couple of weeks, we have our 35th wedding anniversary, Tom and I. We were not high school sweethearts. We met actually at a Sizzler restaurant in Missoula, Montana. And I actually was like, oh, please. And he actually said if she was the last woman on the face of the earth, the human race would die out. I mean, we had disdain for one another. So right from the start, God had to be working miracles and working on our hearts about all kinds of things, including who we were going to pick for, eternity or whatever. But I mean, our story, I don't know. There are so many ways that God wove things into us at the very beginning before we knew what was at stake. And so, for example, before we were married, we were engaged, but before we were married, I remember we were driving down the road, and I don't even remember what prompted this conversation other than my dad. I was raised in an alcoholic family. My dad stopped drinking when I was 16 years old, and so I got to watch kind of from a distance some of his healing journey, but it wasn't until years later that I really felt like my relationship with him had its own kind of healing. And so for me personally, I was like, alcoholism is not going to be part of my future. And for Tom, his family came from a divorced family, and so same thing, he's like, I am not doing that to whatever kids I might have in the future. We were driving down the road one day, and we're like, you know what? Lord, we ask the Lord to witness with us that whatever it is that the future holds, we were not going to carry forward into generations the sins of our fathers and our mothers. We were going to carry forward best intention that we had. We want to carry forward blessing into whatever future it was that the Lord was going to be building and opening up for us. And so that day in the Jeep, we're just like, you know what? Alcoholism stops with me. And the generations of alcoholism, it was going to stop with me. And Tom's like, you know what? Divorce stops with me, and we're going to forge forward into, and you know what? We want to raise our own kids. And you know what else? We started naming these things that we really wanted to see for our future. And it's really neat. So, because 35 years later, guess what? There's no alcoholism in my family, and my kids don't have, any addiction troubles. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we're still married after 35 years of ups and downs and many bumps in the road of seasons of abundance and seasons of great lack and seasons of, I don't know what in the heck we're doing, and I don't know how we're going to get through this. I don't know. God just really witnessed with us that day, and I believe that he opened doors for us that we could never have imagined. When we started having kids, we thought we were going to only have two kids. As you know, we have six children, and so there's all kinds of stories in that regard, but again, God was showing us his
his love. He was showing us redemption. There are redemption stories in every one of my kids coming into this world. And provision, his faithful provision. Because when we look and do the math, there's no way that what, you know, the money that Tom and I have made over the years, there's no way that money should have satisfied the needs of our family. It just wasn't enough.
Right. When you do the math of what it costs to feed six people.
No.
Yeah, eight people.
Exactly. No, it does not add up. So my story, when you talk about start from the beginning, tell your story, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many things. But the headline is that God's faithfulness is, it really is from everlasting to everlasting. And like, he continues to teach us about his goodness. One of the things that really was stirred up in us when the kids were young. And I love how you're talking about what you want to do with your podcast to really recognize those ordinary, everyday celebrations and to acknowledge the ordinary things of a life as worthy of celebration. Because one of the themes that kind of has come out of our family has been this concept of remembering, getting back to, this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad. And it kind of came about like in a season of where it didn't look like there was anything to celebrate. And it looked like it was really hard. And it looked like, I don't want to do this day. Yeah. This day sucks. But God actually says, this is the day that I made.
Yeah, I made the sun come
up. I made this day. Celebrate. Find, it was just the admonition to me and into my heart as a mom. Weary, exhausted, struggling, confused, dealing with issues, you know, all of the stuff, hormonal things, you know, like, you know, tension in my marriage, you know, all of the things of life that are not uncommon, but felt really big, and needing to be reminded that there is something worth celebrating every day. And it was my job to find what it was. And so out of that came all kinds of really cool things in our family and how we do celebrations, how we do holidays, how we do birthdays. And so I love that that is part of the core piece, I guess, of what you're doing here. And it just makes me really happy to get to be on this end of what you're doing.
Oh, thanks. So family, like what was early family life like? Are you a native Montanan too?
Oh my goodness. Let's see. No. So I told you my dad was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Okay. So that meant a lot of job insecurity for my family as we grew up. I lived in 22 different homes before I was married at the age of 20.
22.
I had not counted, but my mom had. So my mom actually told Tom that as kind of a joke. And I was like, I was shocked because I don't remember that. But now talking to my adult siblings, it's like it struck me different than it struck the rest of the family. Anyway, so.
And where are you in birth order with your siblings?
I'm the oldest of three. So when Tom and I met in Missoula, we had our little home in Missoula, got married there, lived there about 4 years, and then we moved to Bozeman, and we've been in Bozeman ever since. We lived in a little tiny trailer house when we first came to Bozeman, and then we've lived in a little suburban home out in Belgrade, you know, it's been 20 years we've lived in that little house. So, or it's not little, but that house. So in my married years, we've lived in three homes.
And one for 20 years.
Yeah.
When you moved around 22 times before you turned 20, is that what you said?
Yes.
And that's the math to think through.
Yeah. So giving our kids roots was really important. Like giving ourselves some roots was really important. And the Gallatin Valley is the place that we are rooted. And we're very, very thankful to the Lord that we get to be here.
Yeah.
But yeah, as the kids were coming, it was really hard. I was exhausted and I felt very, exactly what you were talking about as far as like the world really, especially to women, I feel like there's this message about that. What are you going to do? Oh, you didn't go to college. Oh, you did go to college, but you didn't finish your degree. When are you going to go back and finish your degree? You know, what are you doing with your life? Like all of these things. And I get it. But at the same time, there is the unspoken pressure or the unspoken degradation of what if I just want to be a mom? What if I just, you know, want to grow a garden? What if I just want to, you know, whatever. So when my kids were young and we were in those years, we lived in our little trailer house so that we could afford to live in this beautiful Gallatin Valley on one income. Mm-hmm. And God was super, super faithful and he made a way for us. And so I don't look at those years as years in the desert. You know what I mean? Yeah. I do not despise those years. That little trailer house allowed for me to be home with my kids. I don't know. It's people have got their own, they've got to, you know, figure out their own way and stuff. But for us, it was provision. And I was really thankful. But I'm trying to remember how many kids I had, but I started feeling weary and unappreciated and exhausted and like, this is not working for me anymore. And it had to be when my boys were hitting their teenage years, because there was a lot of sass and there was a lot of pushback. I was homeschooling those kids. Tom was working really hard. I was not working. So everything I was doing was in the home, and there was a lot of angst in the home, and I kind of didn't want to be there. I looked outside the home for something else to do, and I figured, you know what? You're old enough. You can make your own dinner. You know how to do your own laundry. You know how to do your own thing. You don't want to listen to me, like, bring you your lessons? Fine. Read them yourself. Your math is online. Go do it. I do not need to be here while you're doing your things, you know? And so I checked out for a little bit. And I found a really great place, a community of women that was really, really encouraging. And so they acknowledged and applauded the tiniest effort. And I was like, nobody applauds when I make dinner every night. You know, I make these big efforts and nobody even noticed. So there was something inside me, like ego stuff and like just like being sucked dry for all these years kind of business. And it took me a little while in that space to kind of like feel like, okay. I'm ready again.
Yeah.
I'm ready again. And to reengage my kids and their needs and their frustrations and their hormones and all of the stuff that happens as kids grow up, and they sometimes, not always, sometimes they move from these sweet and curious and energetic, like project makers, to these tired and cranky and critical young adults sometimes. I had a couple of those it was hard. It was very hard. But I'm very thankful that I had the opportunity. I'm really thankful for my husband. He has worked his tail off for so many years. Like he has set a lot of his own personal ambitions aside to provide for our family in a way that allowed me to stay home with them. And I'm so, so thankful. And so I did my little thing for a while and then reengaged back home and realized one of the things that was really important was that just because my kids could do XYZ doesn't mean they should have to. Mm. And there was something that, and it's the Lord in his goodness in kind of filling up my cup again and kind of like helping me look at the priorities of my life again. And really my priorities hadn't changed. I just was tired and I just needed a break and
a reset and a moment to just evaluate.
Yeah. And we need each other for that kind of thing. It's not my husband's job. And quite frankly, it is not my kid's job. Okay. It is, I do believe in, and I'm not talking about me time. I'm not talking about, like going and spending a lot of money. I'm not talking about, oh, I need this whole day to go to the spa. I'm not talking about stuff like that. There's a component of that kind of self-care, but there is a component of self-care and filling up the cup that has to do with your community. And I think that that's really, really important to have people in your life that get it and can, I don't know, listen while you whine for a minute, and then, okay, that's enough whining, and let's go ahead and get back to real life. You know what I mean? It's like not entertain years and years of complaining. Does that make any sense?
Totally. Yeah, it's this idea of I see you.
Yeah.
I'm in it with you. I'm doing the same thing that moms can do for other moms.
Yes.
And say, yeah, I get it. But what else are you going to do? Are you going to run away?
Right.
You know?
And you
actually do love these people.
Yes.
And you really do want to spend time with them. And you really do want to do the things you're doing for them.
No, and I really feel like when we gather for our Wednesday morning, I mean,
yeah.
I think it'd be sweet to like, anybody did a load of laundry this week? Raise your hand. Yay. Okay. If anybody cooked a meal for your family, just one. Did you cook one meal for your family this week? And we applaud each other for the minimum, because sometimes it is all we can do to get the one load done. It is all we can do to put one decent-ish meal on the table. It's not cereal for dinner 4 days a week because we're running like crazy people. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's like, yeah.
It doesn't have to be in an outside community. I think we have the community with us. We just need to like, let's acknowledge you made it.
Yeah. And the thing too, I think, is that we need the reminders that we're human, right? Turns out you're human. Turns out you get tired. You need the nap. You need a break.
Some water.
And you're also raising humans. So there's that. Like all of the human things that come with little people and big people and multiple people living in a space together, just trying to live together. It's a lot. And just managing all of that is worth, it's worth doing. It's worth doing well.
Yeah.
And it's worth celebrating and cheering
on. Yes.
Yeah.
The little things and acknowledging the little, and we'll get to big things. I think everybody has seasons of getting some big things done.
Yep.
And I'm super thankful for that. So I'm talking in the seasons where it's like, it's all I can do to like get my teeth brushed in the day, you know, or whatever it is. And I think that's where there's a huge disconnect in our culture as far as community support and even family, like a disconnect within the family, and where, you know, one or the other feels like the other isn't pulling their load, you know, and we do this, well, I'm doing this much, well, I'm doing this much, you know, and we do this weird comparison thing, and it puts us at odds with one another, and whether it's between husband and wife, or whether it's between parents and children, or whether it's, you know, it's like this weird comparison thing, and we do it with ourselves and the outside world, and then, and we do it within our, the walls of our home, which is supposed to be our sanctuary, you know.
Yeah.
If we could remember that our home is a sanctuary, and that in this place, think about a bird sanctuary or an animal sanctuary. What happens in an animal sanctuary? There's no hunting allowed. So in my home, you know what that means? You're not allowed to tease your brother and your sister without, you know, whatever. That means for me, wife, I'm not going to use a sharp and critical tongue with my husband when I'm talking to him. There is no hunting allowed. He needs to not feel like I am after him. You know what I'm saying? What else in an animal sanctuary? They can come to rest without fear. They can come into this protected zone, and there's plenty of food. You know, there's an ecosystem that will support the geese that come to bed down on their way flying south or wherever they're headed. You know, these animal sanctuaries are reserves. They are like, I don't know, correlate that with, you know, other use of those same words, you know, and think about the human condition and how hard it is out in the world. Is there one place that we can go where our needs can be met? And I'm talking basic needs for food, for rest, for refreshing, a shower, a bath, a hot tub, you know, is there a place? Our home should be it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's another one of the kind of concepts that the Lord really opened up in my heart as the mom and as the woman, is that my time at home is not just about doing chores, and it's not just about homeschooling the kids and whatever, you know, weird definition you might put on that concept. Okay. My position as the woman, the queen of my home, is to establish the atmosphere of my home.
Yeah.
Do the people that I love feel welcome in my home, in my space? Do the people in my home feel nourished? Do the people, in not just in their physical bodies, but even in their heart, you know, or in their thirst for knowledge or their curiosity or their, you know, desire to do something artistic, you know, is there a place for them to do those things? What is the atmosphere of my home? Is it an atmosphere of criticism, or is it an atmosphere of worship? Is it an atmosphere of devotion and treasure? Do I treasure? Are you treasured in my home? You know, do people coming into my home feel like they're a welcome guest instead of an interruption?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. And it helps me to elevate out of the concept, you know, stay at home mom. Well, what do you do all day? It's like, well, let me count the ways.
Let me just tell you.
But it's so much more than just the, you know, keeping house.
And it's the atmosphere. It's the tone. It's the vibe.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, that's what I love too, is it's different for everybody, right?
Yes.
I walk into your house, it feels like your house.
Yeah.
You walk into my house, feels like my house.
Yes.
Your giftings, my giftings are different. And we need all of those spaces. Yeah. I always talk to my kids about how I will always be your safe place. You can always come home to me. You can always come home no matter where you are in the world.
Like, yeah.
You'll always be welcome.
Yeah.
And if you have those friends that don't have that space.
Amen.
They can come to our home too, and they will be welcome. And we'll have a conversation for sure. But like, yeah, the door's open. Come on in. Make yourself at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rest. Come rest.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what, Adrienne, so you've got these kiddos, you've got work that you've done, you've got tons of this homeschool experience. Tell us about a time when you've had to change your mind on something you had been doing and then realized this doesn't work anymore, or something you'd been believing that you needed to fix, whatever that looks like. I'm sure we all have those moments. What's one of yours?
The first thing that comes to mind right away is I did develop a business outside the home and loved it. Love it still to this day. Worked very hard, gained a great promotion, had a very prestigious position of leadership, and I was in it about 6 months. I was like, this is not what I thought it was, number one. Mm. And number two, I missed being home. And I missed that even when I was home, I was so intent on this other thing that I was missing a lot of the cool stuff happening with my kids and just home life. I missed my home life. And so I let my promotion go and work my business in a way that is much more passive. And so I said goodbye to the bonuses and the opportunities and came home.
Yeah. Busy families need all the help they can get to stay organized. Enjoy your ordinary everyday as you manage your household with these easy-to-use printables. These digital download planning pages include sheets for homework, chores, summer activities, meal planning, weekly calendars, year-at-a-glance planning, and more. Make your fridge look cute, or create a family binder to keep everyone organized. Purchase once and print forever. Weekly planning pages are bundled in Monday Start or Sunday Start format. For a limited time, buy the bundles at a 40% discount and get the liturgy prints as a bonus. The Get Ready Checklist and Summer Checklist are my favorites. Each of my kids knows exactly what's expected, and they take responsibility for what's on their list. Not just for the kids, there are also downloads you can use for vacation planning, grocery shopping, and habit tracking. Go to ordinaryeveryday.studio for the link. You have big kids now.
Yeah.
Adult kids.
Yes.
Give us some advice on what you think you did well launching your kids, maybe something you wish you could have done a little differently, given your unique parenting situation with the age that your kids are. What's some acquired wisdom
that
you could pass along to somebody who's coming up behind you?
That's a tough one. Tom and I, when the kids were young, we made some decisions And it was all about raising our own kids. It stemmed from this concept of raising our own kids. And so what that meant was that we didn't rely on daycare. We're very, very choosy about our babysitters. It also meant that we, as they got older, we did very, very few sleepovers. The sleepovers happened at our house. You know, we just very, and people would probably look at it and call it very overprotective. We strongly screened their entertainment when they were young. And we talked with them a lot about what we were doing and why. Like, our kids know that they didn't get to watch the same movies as their friends because of the exact reasons that Tom and I were convicted of. And as we're talking about this stuff with them, we're you know, saying, when you become an adult and you're out, you know, and you're in the world, you can do this stuff, you know, watch what you want, but you need to understand it's not because we don't believe in it. We actually believe in it, and we don't think it's a good influence. And so kind of we'd try to equip the kids with our reasoning as we were moving along and stuff. And on the flip side, when Tom and I would get a new understanding of God's goodness or a conviction, we would, as adults, married adults, you know, get a conviction about how we were living, how we were talking to one another, how we were handling our money, the entertainment we were taking in, the relationships and the friendships that we had allowed to change us, pull us off a position that God has called us to, different kinds of things like that. We would gather up the kids and have a family meeting, and we would talk about those things, what was going on. And we would talk to our kids about conviction and what you do with conviction. We made every single opportunity a teaching opportunity. And we had relationships that grew cold for many years, because even though we all said we wanted to raise Christian kids, we wanted to raise our kids, you know, to be, you know, contributing adults in society. We wanted to raise, you know, we would use the same words to state the goals that we wanted with our parenting. But we all had a different way to go about it. Yeah. And so there were some relationships that just kind of took a pause, you know, and that was really hard at that time. And a lot of those have kind of come back around, which is God's goodness to us and just re-gifting a beautiful friendship. But I tell you, our results are different. So I guess my advice would be, if you strongly believe that God has brought a conviction and a clear picture, then stick to it. Kind of doesn't matter what the world around you is saying. It doesn't really matter what your friends are saying. It doesn't really matter what your kids' friends are saying. We would have a phrase that we would use. They would come home from a thing and the behavior was all erratic. You know, things were out of order. There was bullying. There was, chores not getting done. There was lying about schoolwork. You know, there was like all of this stuff. And we'd gather everybody up and we would say, all right. Hold on a minute. This isn't us.
This is not who we are going to be.
This is not who we are called to be. I know that in the world, kids talk to their mom this way. I know that we have friends and the big kids bully the little kids. I know that, you know, we've seen this stuff. But we are Baldwins, and we are bold and courageous friends. And in this house, we treat each other with kindness. In this house, we talk to mom and dad with respect. In this house, we, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was a lot of it. And honestly, it probably is one of the things that caused the distance with some of our friendships. Mm-hmm. But Kristen, honestly, looking back now, I wouldn't change a thing about it, because I know that God was doing something in us. He was doing something in us. And not right now on the end of it. Here's where we are on the end of it. I have 6 kids. My youngest son is a senior in high school this year. And so everybody's grown. 3 of my kids are married. I have 1 grandson. And every single one of our kids is walking with the Lord. Most of them are doing some kind of ministry, and whether it's their full-time gig or whether it is that they take time out of their working hours to go and travel to a different country in the world to be of service and of help to somebody, or whether it is serving on local organization boards and helping with fundraising or marketing or connecting resources with people in need, you know, whatever it is. So I am so proud I'm so, and they're all still learning. That was the other thing too. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, there's no way that I taught my kids everything they need to know to get along in this world. There is no, let's just settle that right now.
State that real clearly. You're not going to have your kids 100% ready to be adults.
No.
There's always a gap somewhere.
And yet I look at my adult kids and every one of them has some kind of a habit or some kind of a free time, like opportunity to learn more things. And they are still learning. And that makes me so happy because it just makes me really, really happy. So they love the Lord. They're walking with Him faithfully. They are lifelong learners and they're hard workers. And I look at those things and just go, oh my gosh. And they want to come and hang out. They come over. Everybody comes over on Sunday. We have family days on Sunday. And everybody comes. And they want to hang out together, and they want to hang out with their old mom and dad.
I love it.
And it's like, I just feel like I am living the dream right now. I have no retirement saved up. My poor house needs a lot of help. I'm driving old cars. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we have not like arrived by the standard of like the American dream, okay? But my kids love us. Mm-hmm. And they love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all kind of decided that we talk about moving. It's pretty expensive to live where we live. It'd be so, mm-hmm. I could sell my house right now in suburbia and I would be made. We could buy a little farmhouse with 20 acres and I would still have enough cash in the bank to retire comfortably.
I was looking at real estate in North Carolina, South Carolina, I forget, middle of nowhere. I thought, oh, well, that's a wonderful home.
Right?
Can't find that around
and
here.
Cute little homes.
Adorable.
Or gorgeous big homes.
Yes.
And, but you know what we would be missing? The kids, the family.
Yeah. Your people are all here.
Our people are here.
Yeah.
And so I even hear the siblings talk amongst themselves going, well, where are you going to, are you planning on staying in the area? Because I'm looking at renting or I want to buy something soon. What are you guys going to do? And, you know, we know a couple of them where they're going to be, but a couple others are still kind of up in the air. And I've got a daughter who married a Canadian farmer. So, you know, but we've all gone up to see them. So we know we can get to them. So it's just like, everybody's asking each other, well, where are you going to be? Well, I don't know. Where are you going to be? They want to, the kids.
They want to stay connected.
Yeah.
They want to be close to each other. That's
anyway, I feel wildly like successful in that regard. And
yeah.
I guess my only advice to others would be you've got to really know what God is calling you to and just do it. Do not hesitate. Do not hold back. Don't think twice about it. If you know that you know that you know, you have a clear vision for what it is, you just have to go for it no matter what the cost. And, We sacrificed a lot of things to walk in the way that God was calling us to walk. We sacrificed a full-time income from me, for sure.
What is something along the way in your parenting and your mothering that has just, like, blindsided you, that has surprised you, that has wiped your feet out from under you? Has there been a thing that you can look back on and say, that I was not ready for?
I was not ready for the shift in my kids the boys especially, as they hit their teen years. I was not ready for that at all. And it wasn't so much that they were growing from boys to men. It was that they lost their spark of curiosity about their education.
Mm.
And that broke my heart. Because you know, we're still required to follow through with education, it just became a war. And I did not anticipate that. And so I have had to change my approach for the high school years. Yeah. And there are some specific that we can talk about that, but that I had to make some changes. And then, so like the last couple have been an easier transition than the first couple of sons, especially.
Sure.
And it wasn't so drastic with my daughters, but with my sons, it was, to me, it was a tragedy. The thing that is encouraging now as watching them as adults is that my oldest son, who I had the hardest time because it was so unexpected, and I was not a soft mom with him over this. And I got that figured out, but my first kid, oh my goodness, it was really, really hard. I thought for sure I was going to have to take him down to the, he was one to head to the Navy. He was going to be a Navy SEAL. And I was pretty much sure I was going to have to take him and sign him away as a minor and give permission for him to enter the military. Because we were not sure what we were going to do. So that was a huge blindside. So I had to learn how to pivot as a mom and as an educator. And once I figured that out, it wasn't losing the battle. I was making everything a win-lose. And you can't do that as a parent at all. And so I came to it kind of late, but I finally realized, this isn't a win-lose. This is a pivot. And how do we all still win together? How do we all still maintain together our dignity and the satisfaction of requirements, which is a thing in life?
Yep.
You know, there are things that are really important that we could win together, but I had made it a me against them against me situation. And so it's a huge mindset thing, and it's a strategic thinking thing. And being able to pivot, give myself permission to pivot was how I navigated that in the future. But it really caught me off guard.
And I think maybe you could speak to this too. So coming from a homeschool world, I remember always telling moms who were thinking about homeschooling, you can always change your mind. And it felt really free when I saw their faces. They had this look on their face of, oh,
yeah,
I guess you're right.
Absolutely.
We could change our mind. We can just try this thing and see how it works and see if it fits. We might fall in love with the thing, and you could use this for so many things other than homeschool, but let's see if it fits, and maybe it is wonderful and beautiful and it's what we want to do, and maybe we find some things that we really don't want to do. But I think that idea of pivoting, you can always change your mind. You might have to readjust, reassess, is good for so many different places in life. Talk about that for a minute.
The pivoting inside our homeschool stuff was really for my sanity. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm a really selfish person. And so what I discovered early on with homeschooling the kids is that if I did not love the material that I was presenting, then we were all miserable.
Yep.
And again, kind of getting back to that thing about how my job as a woman in the home, the wife and the mom and the woman in the home, is to set the atmosphere. So if I am going to approach our homeschool day with drudgery and dread and, oh, I don't even like it, well, what is being released in my house? You know, I didn't want that released in my house. And so there in the early years, I did a lot of changing my mind on some of the coursework, you know, that we needed to do. And I finally got some things narrowed down, and we just kind of took off from there as a family. And so that was really, really good as far as for me being able to make some decisions about curriculum.
Yep.
I had to first come from, so there were my two main things. Do I love it? I want to love it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, can it be applied in a one-room schoolhouse? Because I had six kids.
Yeah.
That's a lot of grades, and I wasn't going to have six different history, six different, you know, science, six different whatever. So a lot of the stuff that's out there now can be done with a one-room schoolhouse approach. And so that was one of my number one top filter, probably top two filter. So those are the pivots that I did inside the house. The other thing that was really important for us is that when things were not working, we just got good at doing resets. And this was Tom, my husband, Tom. And it started actually early in our marriage. Before we had kids, I would get in a bad mood. I'd be upset about something. It would take me all day. And he'd be so frustrated. He's like, come on, let's go do something fun. He'd already moved past it. We'd already reconciled. But I was still in the emotions of frustration or, you know, whatever it was. And I'm like, I don't know how you can just like forget about it that fast. I don't know how you can just reset yourself that fast. I don't get it. I can't do that. And he's like, sure you can. It's just like on the computer. And now our phones. I need to reset my phone because it's bogged down with too many whatevers. It hasn't like shut off for a while. And now it's going really slow. Mm-hmm. I have too many things going all the time. I will reset my phone. It turns back on and is ready to go. And that concept of the reset has helped me move quickly through the emotions of that, you know, come up when we're doing reconciliation. We're doing like confrontational work in our house, you know, the emotional residue lingers sometimes for too long. So that, so Tom does the reset with the kids as well. And so we get these like even curriculum things or, you know, whatever it is, and we need to make this pivot. It's the family meeting. I tell you what, family meeting is like, it might be my husband's superpower. He'll deny it because he thinks I do them. I ask for them, but then he settles things once we're all together. And by settle, it's often this reset idea. And so a lot of times, you know, the conversation is, hey, I know we've been doing it like this for a while, but we're not really happy with how it's going. And so I'm going to go ahead and do something different now.
Yeah.
And I think it helped the kids be like, okay, because sometimes I think changes will happen and we don't put words to those changes. And it leaves some people confused. They don't understand what just happened. And so that was always really important to us, is like to talk our kids through whatever change we were going to make. At homeschool changes, and pivots for us had to do with changing things in the way we did our schedule or the type of curriculum that we did, so that we still would do homeschool, you know, that we were directing the education, but we did make a lot of changes.
Within the system that you wanted to stay in and you had created, you're willing to say, this isn't really working.
Yeah.
Let's find something different.
That's right.
Let's try it this way.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
One of the big things, and I guess I should throw this in there too, because of our decision, then that meant that we had to live on one income. Mm-hmm. We were choosing to live on one income. Mm-hmm. And so that meant really getting down and dirty with the budget and with our extra spending and with, you know, the kinds of things. So just you know, kind of like keep that in mind. I mean, that was probably a really huge thing for us.
Yeah.
Bigger than I recognize. We did it a long time. But
along the way of being a mom, what is a really great piece of advice that you've received, and what is some really terrible advice that you received?
Oh, worst advice ever. Boys will be boys. Girls will be girls. Oh, don't you just hate raising girls? They're so emotional. People's comments like that.
Yeah,
about,
it drives me crazy.
You know, generalizing these bad attitudes and bad behavior because they're boys or because they're girls. And we just rejected that immediately. Worst advice ever. Good people are good people. God calls us, and P.S., he doesn't ask us to be nice. Nice? I don't think it's in the Bible at all. Now, kindness, I think, is a fruit of the Spirit, right? So we could go all kinds of ways with that. But yeah, that I just reject that out of hand. Best advice. Let me see. Best advice ever. And I wish that I had followed this advice. It was from a mom. I was like in the trenches. I bet my oldest was, you know, 10 or something. So everybody was on the scene. Maybe she was 12. Everybody was on the scene. And I was just like, felt too busy to be, you know, being able, whatever. But this mom spoke to me in that stage, but from the stage where I am now, where her kids were grown. And she said to me, Adrian, just sit on the floor and play with them.
Yeah.
And now it just makes me kind of tear up because of the opportunities that I did not, that I was too busy cleaning or, you know, cooking or, you know, whatever. And this stuff has to be done. You guys, I don't know what the answer is because all of that stuff still has to be done.
Yep.
And I think that there is space for God to work a miracle and expand some time and expand some opportunity if I will say yes to those moments of awe.
Yeah.
That he will make provision for the chores that need to be done.
I can pause the dishes and I can look at this amazing thing you just drew.
Yes.
It takes me 5 seconds to affirm and build up and celebrate.
Yes.
And the dishes are still here, but that moment might be gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the best advice that I wish I had followed younger. So I have a grandson.
Yeah.
And he gets to come over to my house a couple of times a week. And we go tromping and romping all through the leaves right now. And we stack blocks and he knocks them over. I mean, he's just one. He's, you know, like 14 months or something. He's just very... just busy, and it's mostly banging around. You know, we're not actually building a whole lot of stuff right now, but it's like, oh my gosh, I get to run around with him, you know, and it's like, I miss those days with my young ones, yeah. Watching them discover something new. If you are a mom, if you're listening right now and you're a mom of young ones, give yourself permission to follow them around and watch them discover something new.
Yep.
Their face, their eyes, their little mouth that goes, oh, my little grandson says, wow.
Yeah.
He finds something new and he's like, oh, wow. And he's so, it actually comes out of him as wow when he discovers something new. So if you are a mom of young ones, give yourself permission to go and be reminded of discovery with them. And if you are a Grammy like me, then you know.
Yeah.
You know, take every opportunity you can to have the littles with you and go discover something new with them.
I love that you're in that phase where you still have a kid at home and you have this grandbaby.
Yeah.
And so those kids have a special connection too, I would imagine. That's special.
Oh my goodness. It is hilarious. And... So this summer I got to the point where I would send out a family chat and I'd say, grandson is coming over today. And it was funny, the grown kids who would pop in on their lunch break to come and say hi to their nephew. And anyway, I just love it.
It's great. Yeah. Couple more questions. What is something that you wish you would have known earlier on? And what's something you wish you could have done differently?
I learned something probably 10 years ago or so. And it's an economic concept that I was never taught in school. And it is the idea that sometimes a thing, okay, fill in the blank. It could be an object or it could be an experience. A thing has more value than its price tag. I made so many decisions for so many years and valuing an object or an experience based only on the price, the actual monetary, how many US dollars it was going to cost me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out later is that that thing, whatever it was going to add more value to my home, efficiency to my day, inspiration to my heart than the measly few dollars that was on the price tag.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have some serious regrets about some of the things that we missed because of the price. You know what? You can make money every day. Money comes and goes.
Yep.
This is what I've discovered about my economic breakthrough in money is that it comes and goes. You go make more. It's like, go sell another lipstick is what I tell myself. You know, it's like, big deal. And but experiences and opportunities may not present themselves again.
Yes.
And if I'm only making a decision based on the price tag, I might be cutting my nose off to save my face or whatever that phrase is.
And the reverse could also be true, right? There are some things that look like a great little price tag, but the cost is way beyond. And you don't know it in the moment sometimes. Like, oh, this actually cost me more than what I thought I was getting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it cost me my peace and it cost me, you know, whatever. Yeah, there are things like that we have to have an understanding of their value, even though they may not have a physical price tag. Yeah. So that, what was the other part of your question?
And what's something maybe you wish you could have done differently?
There was a writing curriculum. Again, this is connected to the other, my other answer. There was a writing curriculum I discovered early on, and it was too expensive at the time. And I went probably 10 years without it. And I finally got it. And my first two oldest had already graduated. And I finally bit the bullet and got this program. And it has been the most freeing writing curriculum that I've ever, and I would try this and try that and try this and try, and you don't want to know the truth, in 10 years I probably spent and wasted the amount of money that I would have spent on the bigger thing if I had just bought it and used it. But anyway, again, lesson learned. That was a regret. So
are you ready for the rapid fire?
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
Okay. Try to answer all these questions in a minute or less.
Oh my gosh, Krista.
With a sentence or less.
Oh boy.
I know, it's hard.
All right, rapid fire.
Okay, what are you reading right now?
I am reading Everyday Holiness. This is my everyday reading right now. I am also reading an end times book, like an eschatology book right now. So it's different than what I learned growing up in Sunday school, so it's giving me food for thought.
What is the first thing you do in the morning?
I'm not going to lie. I check my phone. Sorry.
I'm glad you're being honest. What's the last thing you do at night?
Last thing I do at night is I grab my book from my bedside and read a couple of pages before I go to sleep.
What is something that people get wrong about you?
Back in the day, I would say that I'm assertive and aggressive, and so I don't get my feelings hurt when people say harsh things, but I do.
Yeah. What is saving the day? So something that is just making life easier, life better, making your day go smoother.
Okay. I would have to say my husband right now. Yeah, he has a long list of things that have not been working properly in the last like couple of months. I'm talking vehicles, our furnace. Okay. So we got back from Mexico in the spring and the furnace wasn't working and we didn't worry about it. Well, guess what? It's getting cold,
it's cold
at night.
Now.
And so he's been he does so many troubleshooting things. He is definitely saving the day right now.
You're overwhelmed, caught in a moment of anxiety or stress, just too much. What's the first thing you do?
Make another cup of coffee. But then I try to find a place in the sun. I'll take my coffee to a place in the sun and just be quiet for a minute.
Have a reset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Describe an everyday, ordinary moment that brings you joy.
I have a lot of them. I love watching my youngest kid. My last student is still discovering things, and he gets excited when he discovers new things and he wants to share them with me. Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy. He's officially an adult. He's 18 and he still wants to share cool stuff with his old mom. So I love that. The sunshine, really, truly sitting in the sun. Got a couple of spots around my house that I just enjoy going and sitting in the sun. I love thinking about the future because, it is about my family. God has just been so gracious that's been a priority since the very, very beginning. Before our children were even born, we made it a priority, said it out loud. And I feel like on this end of it, where they're all of them are adults now, and we're living in such full years with them. And I just feel really rich.
Yeah.
I feel very, very deeply rich.
Any last words? Anything we forgot to talk about?
Oh, good grief. I would want to leave people with an encouragement that it is worth it. Like following Christ for sure. Pressing in and taking a chance that you're hearing from the Lord, or like you're discerning a conviction in your spirit. Take a chance that you're hearing it right and go for it. Like if you are longing to be with your kids, then be with your kids. I just really believe that God puts these things deep in our hearts and the world kind of minimizes it. If you have a desire in your heart that is yet to be satisfied, take a risk and press into it. It may be exactly the thing that God put in you to bring you alive. Live alive, I guess.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Mm. This was great.
Thanks for inviting me.
The Mostly Mom podcast is a production from Ordinary Everyday Studio. Find us on Instagram and online at ordinaryeveryday.studio. Audio and editing by Logan Tomorrow. Thank you for listening.